heaven, hell, or prevail? Which of those scenarios do you think is more likely, given the technological progress we're making right now, which is arguably very, very fast? Moore's Law may be coming to a conclusion, but that's not the end of the rapid change. In fact, it may be actually the beginning of an even faster change in technology. And as we move toward, well, I don't know, I guess becoming half human, half machines, as we move toward the enhanced human capabilities that Joel's been talking about tonight, we're going to have a parallel change in our social ability to deal with these changes, or it's going to be hell for sure, in my opinion. But maybe I'm wrong, and maybe as the people who feel this way die out, we'll all find out that that we are changing fast enough to keep pace with it. I hope so. Anyway, we'll be right back. Your chance to ask Joel a question is coming right up. I get questions from listeners, Joel, as we go along with the program. Eddie in New York City says, would you really want to make your children human 2.0? Wouldn't you rather be they, say, are human 3.1? Remember that Microsoft didn't get to a good version of Windows for the PC until 3.1. That's arguable. Could we witness something analogous to this, but with humans? Hello, Joel.
Hello. What, could we, in fact, become different kinds of humans? Certainly. I mean, but the question is, what do you mean by human? I mean, if you're talking about, are we going to be the same kind of people that came across the Bering Straits 15,000 years ago or whenever? Well, already we're not. We routinely live to be 70, 80, 90. They would view that as a miracle. We've already used our technologies to conquer disease and so forth. What's new is that we have these powers that were unimaginable before to start accelerating this process, and we also have the ability to start doing things that, right now all of the powers of the comic book superheroes already exist. There are exoskeletons, for example, at the University of California at Berkeley that think of it as a wearable robot suit. And you put it, I've jitterbugged in this machine, and what it basically allows you to do is lift 180 pounds as if it was 4. I mean, that's super strength. At the University of Pennsylvania, they have devices called functional magnetic resonance imaging machines that show what your brain does when you lie. And I've, stuck my head in this magnetic resonance machine to see if it would work. And, it's still in beta. It doesn't work really tremendously well. But the very fact that you can see what the brain does when you lie and you can identify it is a remarkable change. That's like, the shadow knowing what evil lurks in the hearts of men. And the list goes on and on.
Well, how about you, Joel? I mean, you've described for us a lot of these changes that are going to be possible in the next 10 or 20 years. Would you, if you thought they were safe, avail these for your children? Would you avail yourself of these for your children?
Well, we're already seeing things like, the NBC Nightly News is sponsored by Viagra. Think 10 years ago, if somebody had told you that the evening news was going to be sponsored by a product that does what Viagra does, you would have thought that was nuts. One of the reasons, if I'm making any sense to you at all right now, it's because there's a drug called Provigil, which is a prescription drug readily available. You can get it from your doctor. And what it does is it shuts off the human trigger to sleep. And thank God for it. It's great stuff,
Maybe they should be a sponsor on this show.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Let's dip into the public here. East of the Rockies, Bruce in Pennsylvania. You're on the air with Joel Garreau. Hi.
Yes, sir. I was just wondering, have you seen the movie Awakenings?
I have not.
Well, what would happen if these smart pills, for example, the ones that increase intelligence, were given to someone over a period of time, and then they chose to stop taking them? Would that person's IQ go down?
I'm not really sure. Joel, what do you know about these enhancement drugs, intelligence or memory?
Yeah, well, you know, that's kind of a hypothetical. I mean, that gets into the realm of science fiction. And so the short answer is beats the heck out of me. But the, you know, but it is a concern that, you know, this is one of the reasons that, you know, that we test these things and, you know, and pray that they don't have side effects. You know, will they have side effects? I'm sure they will. Will we be able to correct them? That's the interesting question.
Well, you do expect, though, in the next 10 to 20 years, there'll be a pill that we can take, or there already is, that will enhance our ability to remember. I mean, is that real?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's real as heck. That's not science fiction. That's already in the works in four U.S. pharmaceutical companies, and you know, and they expect to have a commercial product within 3 years.
Wow.
The news is that we have a new understanding of how the brain works that is enabled by our technologies that is, you know, allowing us to do remarkable things. Will there be unintended consequences? Oh, I'm sure there are. That's part of the human discovery process. You know, the question is not whether we're going to make mistakes. That's for sure. The question is whether we're going to learn from our mistakes. That's at the heart of the prevail scenario.
Joel, I wonder how they differentiate between the ability to remember and basic intellect. Aren't they sort of mixed up together in a way?
Sure. Well, I mean, one of the questions. I mean, this is why it's raising profound questions. This is why this is not just, you know, something to just do the oh well. I don't really care about the technology all that much. I'm not that much of a gear freak. I don't care about the toys. What I'm interested in, you know, is where this takes us as a species and where this takes us as humans, you know, whether we're going to end up not being just smarter, but whether we're going to be wiser. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that we're figuring out ways of tweaking the brain that will allow us to conquer diseases right now seem insoluble, like Alzheimer's. The question is, where does this take us? And, you know, and the people who are, you know, who are worried about the health scenario, this is why they're very valuable, because they're asking so many important questions. I think part of what this is that, you know, we tell ourselves horror stories in some ways to inoculate ourselves. You think back to the 50s, and there were all of these, you know, nuclear wintered, you know, horror story movies. On the beach, for example, where the last humans, you know, are sitting there.
I love them, Joel. I absolutely love that genre of movie.
Yeah. And, you know, and in some ways, I think that helped inoculate us. I mean, you look at 1984, that book. You know, I mean, that portrayed a world in which computers, you know, at the behest of a horrible dictator, enslaved the world. Well, you know, in some ways, that was kind of an inoculant. I mean, to this day, when we see something bad going, we say 1984, or we say Brave New World, you know, and we shudder, and, you know, it's a shorthand way of us humans saying that's a road that we don't want to take. I mean, I think that's the real value of these horror stories, is that it's a way of, you know, for us processing change as fast as we can. I think we're storytelling animals. I think that's how.
Or the Forbin Project. I don't know if you ever saw that one. I think it was the Forbin Project. Essentially, that machines are given control over most of what we have, including our nuclear weapons, that sort of thing. And the machines, being perhaps wiser is the right word than we are, decide that we're on the path to self-destruction, and machines essentially do something that we might not think of as being in our own best interest.
Sure. I mean, there's the possibility, you know, that's one of the horror stories that we love to tell ourselves is suppose our creations decide that we're the problem, not the solution.
The infestation, as it were.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to Fresno, California. Robin, you're on with Joel Garreau.
Thanks for taking my call. In order for us to prevail, we must reinvent ourselves. And I wanted to get Joel to comment on what role our education system can play with this and how we teach our children and what we are teaching our children in the public school system. If we don't reevaluate this and teach children in the second grade to type rather than writing cursive, we need to reevaluate our education system because we're never going to thrive. We can survive, but we need to thrive. And I think that since we're animals of habit, changing patterns of thinking is not going to be an easy feat because there's more people who are less likely to step out of a comfort zone. You know, they'll stick with the true, tried, tested, and if it works, don't fix it kind of mentality. How do you feel about the education system that our children are going to every day and how we can change patterns of thinking for parents to say, for instance, you know, my daughter, before she went to college, I said, before you go into that field, you must live a day in the life. She wants to be in culinary. She has to work in a restaurant. She must have a feel for what it's like. And then once you're there, to understand that, yes, you can do it by the book, and you can learn by the book, and yes, you must have that background, but always enhance what you're learning to add your own element to it, to bring to the next degree for your generation something above and beyond what has been a true, tried, and tested. And
all right.
I think unless we think in those mentalities on a day-to-day life, we're not going to get to the point of many more Bill Gates or Einsteins or the people that truly make a difference. And I think with the white noise that these kids are dealing with the iPods and so forth, are they ever going to be able to really think in a manner that's going to make change? The white noise that we deal with on a daily basis is phenomenal.
It is. All right, Robin, hold it right there. That's a lot to tackle. The educational system, Joe.
Well, that's a great point. I mean, in fact, you know, some of the people who have responded most vigorously to radical evolution have been people in the education industry. One of the things that I'm a little depressed by when I work with these people is that they're much more, I mean, they're concerned with saving their own jobs and their own way of doing things. They're much more interested in saving the public education system, for example, than they are, you know, actually creating learning. The public education system was a product of the industrial age. You know, what it did was produce an awful lot of workers with certain minimum skills, and they, you know, they mass-produced these literate people off the assembly line of education. And don't get me wrong, it did the world a lot of good. I'm not knocking it. But then I look at my daughter today, and, you know, who's 16, and when she comes home from high school, the first thing she does is she turns on all her machines. She turns on her IM and her email and her cell phones, and she and her pals end up starting to work on their homework collectively, you know, over the wire as a team. And then they go back to school in the morning, and the first thing the teachers make them do is turn off all their machines. And if they attempt to try to solve problems collectively, like they did the night before, they'd be thrown out of school, and they'd say that was cheating. Well, you know, what I'm saying is that I see plenty of learning going on, but that's not the same thing as the schools.
Maybe you could comment on this, Joel. There are people who believe that, for example, the Internet, instead of stifling ideas, instead of promoting ideas, is sort of making the top 10 ideas available for everybody in the world, so that instead of having somebody on an island or a nation in some far-flung place who didn't know he can do something, he reads on the Internet that it is this way, and everybody believes the same thing. So while the Internet is certainly a blessing in many ways, it may also sort of connect people in a way that it doesn't promote the next evolution, the next idea.
Oh, sure. I mean, there's no technology that's ever been created, as far as I know, that doesn't have downside potential. I mean, Al-Qaeda is using the internet in a very effective fashion. There's nothing magic about these technologies. I don't see any technology that's going to save us, some, you know, magic bullet. It's the question of how we use it. In the case of our new technologies like the internet, you know, it's really different from television and radio. Radio, you know, produced the top 40 list, and those are the only songs that, you know, that you heard again and again and again and again. Now, however, you know, what you're seeing with these new technologies is what is called the long tail, which is, you know, sure, you have bestsellers, but you also have thousands of songs, thousands of books that maybe only sell one or two a week that are also available to you instantly. So, I mean, there's two sides to this. You know, one is that, yes, you can, you know, share Britney Spears faster than ever, and, you know, and your pornography faster than ever. But on the other hand, you can also, you know, trade other kinds of ideas that right now, perhaps, only has, you know, a small number of people listening to it, but it's the ability to take those small number of ideas and get them out to people in a way that was never possible before. That's a reason for guarded optimism.
Well, being an American, I was a little shocked the other day when somebody told me the American educational system is no longer at the top of the list, and I believe that is true. We are no longer at the top of the list at all, and that was shocking and sort of depressing to me. Do you confirm that? And if so, what kind of changes do we need, going back to that lady's question, in our educational system to sort of move in the social way toward the prevail scenario?
Well, those numbers are slippery. You know, if you look at 16-year-olds in math, then it's true. The Americans routinely end up, you know, far down the list. However, if you start looking at 25-year-olds, that's the reason for guarded optimism, because our 25-year-olds are the equal of anyone. And there are some reasons for that. One is, it sounds so simple, but, you know, we have the community college system in the United States, which is one of the great inventions of the second half of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. You know, every time people have a life change in the United States, the first thing they do is they go back to school. That's, you know, they get divorced, they lose their job, the first thing they do is they enroll in the community college. That's a system that doesn't exist in other parts of the world. You know, it allows us to change, you know, as our circumstances change, and it keeps on going, you know, forever. When I teach, I frequently have people in their 60s who are enrolled in graduate school. That's a remarkable thing. The other thing you're seeing is the rise of what's called serious games. You know, we're seeing all of these computer games, and, you know, and of course all of the ink goes to the shoot 'em ups and all that stuff. But increasingly, people are using that kind of technology to teach people how to do surgery, to teach people how to deal with poverty. There are all of these changes that are coming online that we don't really know, you know, what the outcome is going to be. But, you know, if you're going to be, you know, have some reason for hope about the future, you don't look at what's dying. You look at what's being born.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're down toward the bottom of the hour, Joel, so hold tight. We're talking about all kinds of changes in the human race, perhaps changes that will eventually sort of render us non-human or only partly human. From Manila in the Philippines, I'm Art Bell. Indeed, here I am. Joel Garreau is a reporter, editor as well at the Washington Post. He's written a book, a fascinating book, if it's anything like the interview, called Radical Evolution. Certainly, we're having a radical evolution, aren't we? The promise and peril of enhancing our minds, our bodies, and what it means to be human. In a moment, we'll find out if the book is generally available and where. Joel, your book, I take it, is generally available on Amazon.com, all the usual places, bookstores as well. And how long has it been out?
If Doubleday hasn't let me down, it certainly is, yeah.
How long has it been out now?
The paperback just came out in the spring.
All right. So, and the hardback, how long ago?
A year ago.
Mm-hmm. What kind of reviews have you received? And, you know, I'm sure that other people in the publishing business have taken a look-see at it.
Yeah, sure. Let's see. you're giving me the chance to do the plug here. The New York Times, I'm almost called it captivating, brilliant, enthralling, dazzling.
Wow.
So there you have it.
Yeah, not bad.
Even Tom Peters went for it. Says, deserves serious attention for its potential to turn the world upside down and inside out in the relatively near future. Great news. It's extremely readable. I've gotten some nice reviews. I'm very fortunate.
I can imagine. So I'd like to read it myself. There are a lot of new age type people out there, Joel, who think that there's going to be this radical, almost instant evolution in human social consciousness, that there's going to be this magical point where something giant happens, and there's great change in the way humans think about everything. I tend to think that it's going to be more this gradual change, and it is kind of a race, isn't it, to see if we can keep pace with the technological change. And I don't know that we're doing that yet, but I guess if I was as much of an optimist as you are, I might believe so.
Well, I'm an optimist because pessimism is boring, I guess. You know, as I say, I mean, I'm not saying that we can't screw this up. I don't make any predictions. I'm just saying that, you know, if we do have some hope, you know, for where we're headed next, you know, here's what it looks like. The problem I have with an awful lot of the new age nostrums is that, it might work, but it's untestable and it's unprovable. After you say, well, you know, the world is going to change dramatically, then you say, okay, fine, great. And if it doesn't, then what? It's a triumph of hope, but with no agenda. I mean, you know, so what do you do with this is what I keep on asking people. And that's where I, you know, find an awful lot of the new age stuff to be lacking.
Mm-hmm. Pessimism is not boring, Joel. It's if it were, it, you know, I mean, it generated things like On the Beach and other wonderful movies that just scared the hell out of us. First time caller line, you're on the air, John, with Joel.
How are you doing?
Okay.
What do you feel about? Do you mind talking a little bit about Jesus Christ and the Holy Grail and things like that?
No, I don't think we mind talking about that. That's religion. And, Joel, in this, kind of brave new world that you talk about, there are going to have to be changes, I think, in religion. And if there are not, well, it's the reason we're divided as we are now. You want to venture into that territory at all?
Sure. One of the things that I've done is, I've got a book that has evolution in its title, Radical Evolution. Mm-hmm. And so, and as you know, the whole teaching of evolution has become tremendously controversial. So I've gone out of my way to try to reach out to evangelical Christians. I've been appearing on their radio shows with a certain amount of regularity. And it turns out that that I offer them an out that they find attractive. It turns out there are an awful lot of smart evangelical Christians who are not particularly interested in this, in fighting the Darwin Wars over again, but they just don't want to look don't appear to be disloyal to people who are fellow believers. So, you know, when I get on their shows, I say, hey, tell you what, how about we just set aside for the time being, you know, what happened 100,000 or a million years ago? Let's talk about what's going to happen to our kids in the next 5, 10, 20 years, and it dramatically changes the conversation in a way that causes them to constantly invite me back.
Yeah, that's a very good approach. I really hadn't considered that one. Instead of arguing at all, just sort of look ahead instead of looking back. That's a good one. Wildcard line, Diane in Glendale, Arizona. You're on with Joel.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
And Joel. And I'd like to just say quickly hi to my brother Bill in Yuma. I'm sure he knows who I am. You know what? I disagree wholeheartedly with everything your guest has said.
Really?
And Joel, do you believe there's a creator or not? We all climbed out of primordial muck. Is that it? And we've...
Here's where we get to try it. Now, why even bother arguing all of that? As Joel says, why not look ahead?
Let's look ahead at what he said regarding the smart pill to de-trigger a human's need for sleep. I believe we have that already in crystal meth, and look at the results of that.
I don't think crystal meth is exactly what he was talking about.
Well, but what would be the results? People stay up for days and days, and then they kill their children.
I can address that.
Okay, go right ahead.
There are lots of ways to stay up. I mean, that's not the big deal. I mean, caffeine is as old as tea in China and coffee in Arabia and chocolate in the New World. That's not the big deal of staying awake. The big deal is doing it without ruining your cognition, ruining your way of thinking. I mean, the downsides of speed are legendary.
What's
remarkable about the new brain drugs is their ability to target specific areas of the brain. I mean, it's the broad spectrum approach that creates side effects. It's the ability to, you know, deal with the brain in very highly specific ways that offer possibilities that, you know, ultimately we'll have drugs of one, in which, you know, there are drugs that are tailor-made, you know, for art. It'll be art 12379, and it'll be aimed specifically at his genome. Now, you have to decide whether that's a heaven or a hell outcome, but it's in the works.
Sure. Well, you know, she came at you again with the same argument that you said you dismissed by saying, let us just look at the future. But that perhaps dismisses it too easily, because the belief system and the strength of that belief system of people like that young lady and the others that you encounter on the programs you talked about is so strong even though you're able to divert the conversation temporarily and get a good show out of it, Joel, that still that belief system lurks as a giant cog in the wheel, the possible wheel of prevailing.
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right. And one of the things that I find interesting is the rise of fundamentalism worldwide.
Yes.
Not just Christian fundamentalism, but Muslim fundamentalism, Jewish fundamentalism, and there's even Buddhist fundamentalism, my God.
Yes.
And if it's going in the direction
that you suggested, Joel, I'm sorry, if it's going in the direction you suggest it needs to be going in, shouldn't that not be the case?
Well, that's what I thought. You know, I've been scratching my head about that, and I thought, you know, well, didn't people predict that, you know, that with the rise of science that rationalism would prevail? I think what's going on is that as we see change going faster and faster, it's difficult for people to handle this. And as a result, anybody who says that they have got a solution and that they have got a truth, well, that's going to be incredibly attractive. That's going to be, I mean, when the ground is moving beneath your feet, you know, you look for something to hang on to.
You bet.
You know, I think that's what, fundamental beliefs do, is they offer you some bedrock, and I totally understand the attractiveness of it. On the other hand, you know, the question is, you know, can you proceed to imagine new ways of dealing with these problems that we're facing in the real world? You know, and, I mean, I think that it's all well and good to consider the hereafter, and I'm in favor of that. I'm right now focusing on what we're going to do to deal with our societies and our hopes and our dreams in the here and now.
Okay. East of the Rockies in Illinois, John, you're on with Joel. Hi.
Hi, Art. Hi, Joel. This is from Springfield, Illinois. Hopefully, Art, you had a happy Thanksgiving. If I don't talk to you, have a Merry Christmas to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Joel, instead of taking pharmaceuticals to enhance memory recall, what do you think about the future holds for implants directly attached to nerve endings? For example, there's someone on the East Coast that's disabled, that he runs his whole house just by thinking, and military pilots directly linked to weapon systems and flight systems. And I'll listen off the air.
Okay, well, I guess you didn't catch the beginning of the show because that was covered, but you may want to go ahead with that, Joel.
Yeah, well, I'm not aware that those technologies are actually out of the lab yet. I mean, I don't know that there's anybody actually flying a plane with their thoughts, but in fact, you do have humans who are running their house, for that matter. But but we did have the first human being in 2004 to send an email with his thoughts, a person who was Matthew Nagel, who's a quadriplegic. So, I mean, these technologies that blur the distinction between the made and the born, between us and our machines, you know, are definitely happening. Right now, there are 30,000 people in the United States running around with what's called cochlear implants. These are not hearing aids. These are the little computers that are attached directly into the nerve endings that go to the brain, and they allow the profoundly deaf to hear.
Yes, Rush Limbaugh is one of them.
Yeah, and another one is ocular implants, which similarly go directly into the optic nerves and is basically a little computer camera that's piped directly into the brain and allows the profoundly blind to see. I mean, you know, one of the problems that I have talking about this is convincing people of what exists, much less what's in the pipeline. I mean, that's one of the difficulties that we're dealing with the pace of change, is that the incredible is happening every day.
And you've got to wonder a little bit, Joel. These are things that we know about. I wonder how much DARPA is working on and other similar agencies that they have decided not to make us aware of yet.
Yeah, I asked that question. I spent the better part of a year there. You can go on the website to www.darpa.mil and just start going through the list of what they're working on. And what they're working on in the clear is the part that's pretty jaw-dropping.
Yes.
There is no doubt some classified work. But, you know, you don't have to worry about that. Just worry, you know, just take a look at what actually exists and what's in the labs and what they're being very upfront about. That website goes on forever.
Yes, it does. On the international line, Rob in Ontario, Canada, you're on the air. Hi.
This is absolutely fantastic. All right, you know what? You guys are covering all aspects, and I thank you for that.
Thank you.
You bet.
Okay. As far as you talk about heaven and hell, okay, and the last caller, she was a little bit stuck, I believe, as far as what you said about the fundamentalism. Oh, my God, I'm stuck. Okay, my question is, if God is omnipotent, why would he create a hell where somebody would be destined to go there knowing that, then why create that person in the first place?
And none of them.
Well, that may be, that one may be a little bit... out of any of our leagues.
I'm a reporter, not a theologian.
Okay. Wish we could answer that one for you, but yes, we can't. West of the Rockies, Jim, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art and Joel. Fascinating show.
Thank you.
Don't you think it would take some sort of catastrophic event in order to bring the human race together and in order for them to be able to shed these cultural and religious differences in order for them to accept, you know, this radical technology, you know?
Well,
that actually is a very good question. I remember that President Reagan, among others, made several comments that perhaps it was wishful thinking, that what if the Earth were invaded by some extraterrestrials? Then we would all have to come together to fight a common foe. Joel, this one also is probably out of your ballpark, but do you think some giant event of that magnitude would bring us all together?
Well, that would be the easy way. I mean, the reason that people have hopes like that is because it, you know, it takes us out of the hard slogging of having to invent the future ourselves.
Right.
I have the, if suddenly the Martians arrive, well, you know, all bets are off. My proposition is, suppose that they don't. You know, suppose it's up to us. This is a rather remarkable situation that we're in here, where, you know, we humans are increasingly taking control of matter and energy and life itself. If you're basically assuming the powers that seemed godlike 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, you know, the founder of the Whole Earth Catalog once said, "We are as gods. We might as well get good at it." I think that's what this is about.
Well, it may be, Joel, that for evolution to continue, perhaps we've been brought this far, and then it's been put in our hands, and our own evolution is, in fact, in our hands. You apparently believe that.
Well, yeah, that's where the evidence seems to take me. I mean, one of the things that has occurred to me is that we don't seem to be able to find any other intelligent life form in the universe. Perhaps this is the wrong show to say that on. Maybe you have different information than I do.
No.
But the thing that occurs to me is, you know, maybe this is the final exam. You know, maybe the reason that we're not finding other intelligent species is that maybe all intelligent species get to the point where they take control of their own evolution, their own engineered evolution, their own radical evolution. Maybe this is the final exam. Maybe everybody else flunked. That's yet another reason for us to, you know, we got a long way to go and a short time to get there.
Yeah, that's not at all hopeful. If the reason we've not yet heard from any other intelligent race is that there is this final exam point, and just about everybody flunks, then I think it was Michio Kaku, a very well-respected theoretical physicist, who said that when you get down, really get right down to it, Joel, the possibility of us moving from a type zero to a type one civilization, and I won't go through trying to describe that for you, but basically handling the discovery of element 92 and living through it, the chances of our getting through that are very slim in his estimation.
Sure. And yet we've done it for the last 60 years. I don't mean to come across as a Pollyanna. I don't mean to suggest that I think that that the optimistic version of this is in any way inevitable. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I totally see how we can screw this up. The hell scenario is very, very real and very possible. The one thing that I wonder is whether the other species who may have hit this point weren't the kind of ornery, cussed, unpredictable sorts that we humans are. I mean, I think that if we prevail, it's going to be not because we're so special, but because we're so ornery.
All right. Joel, that's it. We're way out of time. Buddy, thank you for being on the program. It's been absolutely brilliant. You have a good night.
Thank you, Art.
Take care, Joel. All right, everybody, that's it from Manila in the Philippines for this night. And what can I say? Good afternoon, evening, morning, wherever, whatever it is, wherever you are. I guess I'll just say prevail.